Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, the topic today is how COVID has impacted the U.S. healthcare system and the economy. Big question, broad question. What have been the ongoing, long-term effects here that we can expect, as well as short-term developments? Let's look at first the dimensions of the crisis here. Let's look at COVID itself, then the healthcare system, then the economy. Well, as you all know, Omicron is highly contagious and is accelerating the number of infections and deaths as well. You know, part of the spin is that, Omicron is less lethal. And that's true if you're vaccinated. If you're not vaccinated, it's not less lethal. And we only have 64% roughly of total U.S. population that's been vaccinated with two shots. Maybe only 25 or 30% who's gotten a booster. Let me comment on the effectiveness of these vaccines. First of all, part of the vaccination record includes the traditional vaccine, J&J, Johnson & Johnson. I believe it's highly ineffective, Johnson & Johnson. And that goes for other traditional vaccines like AstraZeneca in Europe, Sputnik V in Russia, Sinovac in China. The mRNA vaccines are more effective, but it appears that their effectiveness dissipates fairly quickly after 6 months, or maybe less. And neither of the two types of vaccines are very effective, I believe, when it comes to someone whose immune system is very weak or damaged through diseases or other drugs, other procedures, cancer, so forth. And if you're elderly, neither vaccine is very effective, I believe. The traditional vaccines, J&J, are not effective. And, you know, that's why the government is saying quietly, don't get a J&J booster. Go get a Pfizer or a Moderna booster. And that's like saying, you know, it doesn't work, but we don't want to tell you so. So we got this conundrum here of 30% plus of the population won't get any kind of shot. And on to that, J&J is not very effective, maybe 20-30%, that's it, which is very low. Add on to that, you got to have a booster. And not too many people have gotten the boosters, even if you have the mRNA. And add on to that, we've got millions and millions of people who have challenged immune systems, for which the vaccines don't work all that well. Anyway, if you listen to what's going on from the government, vaccines are effective. They don't go into the details. There's a real messaging problem going on from the government here, and they're beginning to recognize it, and it's beginning to hit the news media and so forth. Just consider what we've been hearing here for two years. Some examples of the poor communications, and maybe some of it is purposeful misrepresentation. Who knows? First of all, we were told, our policy is to eradicate all COVID, right? Remember that? Well, now they're saying, we got to learn to live with it, right? They initially said the mRNA two shots was 95% effective. Well, then they said, you got to get a third shot. And now they're even talking about a fourth shot in some countries. And we don't know the effects on your immune system of these shots every 6 months, we'll find out. J&J, they said, it was 70% effective, almost as good as mRNA. No, It's not even given anymore. They said children don't get it. Well, yes, they do get it. One of the fastest increases is kids getting it under 5 years old, where there's no vaccination. 138% increase here in the first week of January. Oh, cloth masks are okay. No, they're not okay. You better go get an N95. Oh, you got to do a 10-day quarantine. Well, only 5-day quarantine, right? Well, when we get to 80% herd immunity, we'll have herd immunity, and that'll be the end of it. They don't know what is herd immunity. They don't know what percentage. The vax presents prevents infections. No, you can get breakthrough infections, right? We know that now. Oh, it prevents hospitalizations and deaths. Well, we've had 848,759 deaths in the U.S. as of January 13, according to newsnodes.com, part of BNO News. If you want to know what's the data of what's up to date, go check that out. Okay. 2,000 plus deaths on January 13, change in the 7-day average, up 36%. Now, they all admit, you know, Omicron has pretty much pushed out Delta. Delta was more deadly. I don't know if these deaths, 36.1% increase in the last 7 days in deaths, is really a hangover from Delta, because, you know, it usually takes weeks for someone who contracts Delta and is very susceptible to perish, or whether this is Omicron, we don't know yet. So 36% death increase in the death rate. Case rate, 32%. Last 7-day average, 32% this week compared to the week before. Total cases, about 65 million total cases. New cases on January 13th, yesterday, 906,000. 906,000 in one day. That's mind-boggling. And again, many of these, if you're vaccinated or in good health, it's not going to hospitalize or kill you. But we have so many people who aren't vaccinated and in good health. All those exceptions that I mentioned. You know, not vaccinated at all. Boosters needed, the originals worn out. Got a damaged immune system, et cetera, et cetera. 65 million total cases. Almost a million in one day, up 32.3% change the past week compared to the previous week, 7-day average. Total deaths, 850,000. 2,000 a day increase. 7-day average last week compared to the week before, up 36% in the death rate. All right, this war's not over, you know? No, it's and Omicron is not as benign as they say it is, unless you are vaccinated or in good immune health, then it is benign. But for people who aren't vaccinated or have a damaged immune system, and there's tens of millions of Americans in that category, either because of age or illness of some kind, or I think a lot of immune systems have been damaged by big pharma pushing a lot of the bullshit pills for this and that on people, which are designed to, you know, if you got a skin rash or something, they give you a pill that suppresses your immune system so the rash goes away. You see, there are a lot of diseases, particularly diseases, of rashes and skin and some other diseases that affect the nervous system. That are used and advertised ad infinitum on the media, on TV. Right? You watch the news, regular news, or Business News, Bloomberg, whatever, you know, and God, it's all they're advertising, all this immune suppressant solutions to minor problems, even severe problems. Okay, so that's the picture where we are. In the first week of January, we had 4 million new cases, right? Globally, we had 13 million new cases. The U.S. is leading the world in new cases. We've got 64 million new cases, up about 10 million in 1 week here. It was, at the beginning of the year, 52.9 million, or 63. So we've added almost 2 million cases. We're running a million cases a year, a week rather. That compares to India, the next largest, with 35 million. Well, maybe that's 40 billion now. I mean, think about it. India, 1.3 billion people, or 1.4 billion people. U.S. about 340 million. So we're about one-fourth, or even less than that, of India's population. And we have almost twice as many people. Now, you know, maybe there's problems with record keeping in India. We don't know. But if you look at Brazil, which is also almost the same population as U.S., 22 million as opposed to 64 million. Well, 22 was a week ago. So, yeah, let's say 25 million. We're 64 million cases in the U.S. The only other country that compares in terms of percentage cases to the U.S. is the U.K. The U.K. is about 15, 16 million. Population, I think, about 100 million in the U.K. So, just about a third the size and proportionally the same number of cases. 27 countries with more than 2 million cases, 42 countries with more than 1 million cases as of a week ago. Okay. Hospitalization in certain parts of the country, of course, we know the hospitalization problem is very severe. Right. There's about 2,800 U.S. hospitals. There's about 5,000 hospitals in the U.S. 2,800 have ICU beds, right? And maybe 900 of the 2,800 with ICU beds have ICU capacity at 95% or more. 95% or more. And it's estimated, I've seen the statistic projection that by March of this year, there'll be 140 million new cases in the U.S. Whoa. 245 million Americans have had one shot vaccine. That's 74%. That's one shot, right? 206 million have had two shots. That's the 63%. But only 73 million have gotten boosters since August. So, you know, that's like 25%. And boosters are apparently needed with the mRNA because it wears out. Okay. In short, the vaccines have helped, but they mostly probably help people whose health is not all that bad, you see. And that's why people who are getting breakthrough cases are not getting very ill. Cases are up, but you still have hospitalizations and deaths up because there's a lot of people in the U.S. who have challenged immune systems, right? Challenged immune systems. Or no immunity at all. It's a big problem. The other problem, another problem, is that the U.S. government, now we've had a year of Trump during this crisis, we've had a year of Biden, and the U.S. government Both parties, in my opinion, have not stepped up and done what needs to be done to deal with this problem. And now they're doing even less, you see. We'll talk about the Supreme Court's recent decision here, a very pro-corporate, conservative decision, shooting down policies. I mean, Biden and Democrats are getting whacked by the corporate system here and the capitalist system left and right. They're losing out in Congress and the legislature. They're losing out in state legislatures. They're losing out in the Supreme Court. Totally inept, ineffective policy, which in its origination was not totally effective. Anyway, what do I mean by that? Well, you know, from the very beginning, we've had a problem of offshored corporate business of essential PPE, personal protective equipment, right? Remember in the beginning, old ventilators. Oh, we had to get ventilators from China. Yeah. Why? It's not that China gave it to us. It's probably a U.S. company that made them, relocated to China. That's probably what happened. They don't tell you the details. Now, big problem. Big problem having offshored a lot of what's needed. And, of course, then we saw all problems with face shields and smocks and gloves and N95 masks and so forth. And now it's test kits, right? Now it's test kits. I'm not sure where these test kits are made, but I'll bet you most of them are made offshore again, right? And because it's behind the curve, the government's always behind the curve, trying to respond to the next twist or turn of the whole problem and COVID itself. COVID is always controlling the government response rather than the government anticipating where it's going. Come on, they knew that there would be more variants. You know, scientifically, you knew typical viruses, right? Find ways of changing to continue to outsmart human responses. And that's exactly what's happened. And each time they're behind, the government's behind the curve. Now it's test kits, right? Oh, we're told they're going to get $500 million out to us of test kits soon, you know. And then another $500 million, promises, promises. We'll see. You know, you should contrast that to Germany. You know, Germany, you can go get a test kit anywhere publicly. You get a test kit before you go to a public building. You get a test kit before you go to school. You can go down to the pharmacy and get a test kit for virtually free, just for the cost. Couple bucks. Yeah. Oh, what do you have to pay here if you want to buy it online? Buy next now, right? $29 a test kit. $29. Price gouging going on. Yeah. Here in California, they had to file a charge and get the state government to investigate why the available test kits are being price gouged. Why are we getting price gouged? In other words, raising it even more so. Well, that's the capitalist free market system, right? Charge whatever you can. Supply and demand. That's how it works. Well, it doesn't work that way in Germany. It doesn't work that way in a lot of other countries. You know, why are we behind? You know, why are we responding and not very quickly and not very effectively to this problem? Well, because they haven't treated it like a war. Look, nature's at war with us. Yes, nature's had enough. They're throwing the COVID out at us, right? That's one way. Global warming and all the climate change and so forth is another way. They're just fighting back. This is the World War III. We're right in the middle of it. Yeah. 21st century, World War III, nature's war on us for what we've been doing. It's not we, it's the capitalists, right? It's not we. We have no control over what it's doing, what we're doing to it. Yeah, by the way, you know, Senator Manchin, who shot down the Build Back Better bill, this is a digression, has said that, oh, well, you know, he may consider some spending. He keeps throwing out, you know, the dangling the bait to keep the discussion going, dangling out the bait, saying he might consider some spending if first the Biden administration passes big tax cuts for nuclear power companies. Hey, shh, don't tell anybody. Nuclear power is owned by the oil companies. And they own most of the coal companies, too. You know, Manchin's not the senator from coal. He's the senator from oil. Oh, but they don't say that, do they? They cover all that up. Yeah. Well, that's an aside on... couldn't resist that on what's going on in Congress. We'll return to that. Look, the United States spends more money on health care than any other country in the world, not even close. In 2020, it spent $4.1 trillion. $4.1 trillion on health care. Okay? That's almost 20%. One out of every $5 spent on health care. And most of that goes to insurance companies. Nah, it's not your neighborhood doctor. Yeah, insurance companies and other companies involve, you know, the healthcare system is what? It's hospitals, right? It's insurance companies. It's medical equipment companies. It's doctors. It's dentists. It's clinics. Those are the segments of the healthcare industry. And the price increases are led by, guess who? Health insurance companies and or the hospital chains. And as they price gouge, all the others fall in line. Well, Big Pharma is there too, excuse me. Big Pharma. They're the worst price gougers. Yeah, $4 trillion we spend. $4 trillion. And we have one of the poorest outcomes of all the healthcare systems in the country, in the world, really, in terms of... mortality rates, right? Infant mortality rates, and other indicators. We always come out on the bottom of the most advanced economies, the 18 or so most advanced economies. The U.S. in terms of effectiveness comes out on the bottom in terms of the performance of its healthcare system. Right? Okay. How about the effect on the U.S. economy? We know that the healthcare system is in shambles. Healthcare system is in shambles. It's fracturing right now and in deep trouble because of the way it's funded. You know, we have this mismatch or mismash of different ways of funding. We got Medicare. We got that bare-bones second tier called Medicaid, right, which most doctors won't take because it pays very little. It's coverage in name only. It's better than nothing, but not all that much better than nothing. All right. So Medicaid covers people 65 and over. There may be 50 million people there. Medicaid, bare bones, covers I don't know how many. In some states, you know, don't even want improvements in Medicaid. The government's refused. The government money. State governments, Republicans, red states, refused the money. And their states need it the most. It's the red states where the healthcare outcomes are the poorest, and they don't want it. Yeah, well, it's because it ties their hands. They have to spend it. And then, of course, we have aid for children of low wage and poor people. That's another program called SHIP, S-C-I-P, or SKIP, whatever it is. Right? So, you know, we've got bare bones for people at the very bottom, and we've got bare bones Medicaid for people, you know, in between, and we've got Medicare, which businesses have increasingly been trying to privatize with some success. Medicare Advantage, for example, privatized Medicare. That's the healthcare system. Yeah, and people can't afford. Medical bankruptcy is still very high and growing, you know, in the country, number one cause of household bankruptcies. It's the system in shambles. And COVID has come along and whacked it further. Here's a statistic that is just mind-boggling, right? Jobs in healthcare. Nurses in hospitals. Did you know that in 2 years since we've had COVID, 500,000 nurses have quit? 500,000 nurses? The employment of nurses in the system? In 2019 was 3.4 million. This is from the Government Employment Situation, Labor Department, Table B-1. Go look it up. 3.4 million nurses in healthcare in 2019. In 2021, 2.9 million. We lost 500,000 nurses. We've lost other people in healthcare, in hospitals as well, not just nurses. In other words, what's being done to invest in providing employment, training, you know, hospital beds? We got what? 340 million people in this country, and we only have 138,000 hospital beds? Yeah, think about that. Well, maybe that's with ICUs. You know, I checked that. I think that's ICU beds, right? You know, what happened if we had a war or something really serious, more serious than COVID, right? People wouldn't even be able to get into the hospitals. And you know, that legacy goes back to Bill Clinton, because it was Bill Clinton who in the 1990s pushed a policy that said, okay, you hospitals, to be more profitable, you can reduce the number of beds. And that, okay, it's good for private hospital chains to take over the public hospital system. And, of course, they're always cutting services and quality and so forth in these private chains. Yeah, so the problem of inadequate beds, in other words, physical facilities, goes back to Bill Clinton. And the problem still exists. 340 million people, we don't have enough hospitals, let alone hospital beds in this country. We don't have enough nurses. And I'll bet you all the other professional occupations in hospitals are also down and short. They just passed this big infrastructure bill, you know? Was there anything in it to really upgrade our hospital system and hospital professional employment, training, and so forth? No, nothing. We're in the middle of COVID. They passed an infrastructure bill that has nothing to do with hospitals. Nothing to do with healthcare. Nope. Big largesse for a lot of big corporations, construction corporations, you know, Brown Root and all those guys. So, one of the impacts of COVID, in other words, on the economy is to cause a further deterioration of our healthcare system, the infrastructure, the physical facilities, the professional employment, and so forth. Yeah. We need a crash program funded by the government to train 500,000 or more nurses. Where is it? They're not even talking about it. That's one of the big impacts. Another big impact we know we've been seeing for a long time is unemployment and jobs. 4.5 million people dropped out of the labor force. They're not counted as unemployed. That's why you got a 3.9% unemployment rate, because you don't count the 4.5 million people who dropped out. That's the way the government does its oxymoron unemployment employment statistics. Really dumb. Oh, we won't count those. Well, they dropped out of the labor force. They're not working. They're unemployed. They're jobless. Well, we're not going to count them. You see, that's what they say. And the 3.9 also, when you hear it, does not include people who worked part-time who got unemployed. And there's 50 million of them in the U.S. They don't count that in the 3.9% either. Okay, maybe they only had a half-time job, 20 hours a week. But they're still unemployed from that part-time job, but they don't count them. Another dumbass statistic is the way the U.S. estimates GDP, gross domestic product. Does so very conveniently to dampen down how poor the economy is doing. In other words, overestimates, right? For example, right? Inflation is over, recession is over when the economy simply stops free-falling. It doesn't fall anymore. You know, maybe it fell quite a bit, and it's, you know, in a trough. But if it stops falling, oh, that inflation, the recession is over. That's why they say, oh, the COVID is the shortest recession in U.S. history. Not so. GDP is a poor indicator of that. They, even if they're using GDP, they should say, well, when you get back to where you were before it all began, then it's over. But they don't say that, you see. It's just when you stop falling further. You could fall pretty far, take a long time before you get back up on your feet where you were. That should be the measure of recession. Plus, you got to remember, you know, in 2013, the government played games with how they estimate GDP. They play games. What games? Oh, they allow companies to say, okay, the value of our logo has improved, you know, in price. How the hell you measure that? I don't know. And therefore, we're adding that to our investment number that we're sending the government to estimate business contribution to GDP. Yeah, intangibles, they call them. Intangibles, you know. Just one example. $500 billion a year boost the GDP because of these intangibles, which is just whatever the company wants to say it is, and they say it's more than it is, so they look good to their investors and their stock price does not crumble. Yeah, so beware of GDP. But I think we're going to see a softening of GDP nonetheless in the first quarter of 2022 here. Now, inflation is cutting deep into consumer spending. Deep. We began to see that already in November and December. And consumer spending is 2/3 of the economy. Because you got to adjust the actual spending by the rate of inflation to get real GDP, real consumer spending, right? And that's another problem because they lowball inflation. You know, they say, last week here, we got a CPI of 7%, right? 7%. year on year, December to December, of inflation, consumer price index, up from 6.8% the previous month, November to November. Oh, but Biden administration comes out and says, oh, it's slowing down. Well, how's it slowing down? So I thought 7% is more than 6.8. And if you want to look, you know, more specifically, the rate of inflation in the first week of January was twice that of the last week in December. This thing's accelerating. And supply problems aren't going away. It's not just getting things over here on boats from China to L.A. port. No, it's a small picture, small part of the total supply problems in this country. A lot of it is, you know, you just can't get people who you need to work in trucking and warehousing and so forth for a variety of reasons. You know, we're a million truckers short. Well, why are we a million truckers short? Because the real pay for truckers has declined in the last 20 years, one-third. Who the hell wants to go into trucking where the wages are falling? Or who wants to go into, you know, private 18-wheel contractors, truckers, you know, when they can't make any money? Yeah, so that's one reason we have shortages. We got shortages of labor, shortages of materials all over the place. It's one of the legacies of COVID here. It's really whacked what we call the labor markets. It's also whacked the product markets. You know, product markets, and by the way, which means services as well. We know the supply chain problem is an example of that, right? Not just ports, domestic supply, real estate markets. Well, we know there's a problem with residential real estate, building materials and so forth, shortages, supply again, right? Commercial real estate. What's commercial real estate? Well, that's malls and hotels, office buildings, factories, theme parks, casinos, entertainment venues, etc. That's what we call commercial real estate. Well, it's in deep doo-doo. Commercial real estate is just not coming back. One of the long-term product impacts is that, you know, malls and shopping centers are going to disappear. Well, they're already disappearing. A lot of them. People will not, now that they're used to ordering online, go into malls and shopping centers the way they used to. They're going to have to sell those malls and shopping centers, turn them into something else. Big problem. Another problem, of course, is office buildings. We know in big cities, urban cities, workers have moved out of the office buildings and working in many industries, not all, but many, remotely. That's not going away. That's going to continue. So a lot of these office buildings in the main cities are going to be partly or totally empty. That means they're going to lose a lot of money. That means they're going to default. You know, real estate, commercial real estate is the big weak link here in the financial system, because a lot of it has been kept afloat by junk bonds. You know, your big box retailers have borrowed all kind of junk bonds, meaning it borrowed from banks and speculators at high rates. You know, it's junk if they got to pay more than the going rate. They call those junk bonds or high yield bonds, corporate bonds, right? Well, if they're paying high rates, you know, in principal and interest, and they're not making a lot of money because people aren't shopping there, guess what happens? They default on those bonds, and they go under, they go bankrupt. And it has a psychological contagion effect on lending and other companies in that same segment of the economy, and they start having trouble. Okay, that's going to slow. That's like a dry rot that's making its way through the commercial real estate system. If we have a financial crash here, a problem again, I think commercial real estate is a prime example. And property developers in general. You know, you hear about China, Evergrande, and some of those companies, property developers over there, in deep doo-doo, technically bankrupt, can't make their bills, right? A lot of the money to them has been loaned by U.S. and other financial speculators. So if Evergrande and the property developers in China go under, well, then it's going to... contagion is going to spread to these other investors in them, which include U.S. and other Western speculators. You know, hedge funds and private equity firms, those kind of guys. So watch it closely what happens with property developers in China and commercial real estate here in the United States. But all of this is the consequence of the exacerbation of product markets and financial markets due to COVID, 2 years of COVID. You see, these big changes don't occur quickly overnight. They sort of work their way like a cancer and, you know, rotting out the system, whether it's the financial part or the product part or the labor part, you know, and then they explode, right? Well, other... long-term effects on the economy besides commercial real estate, supply chains for discrete manufactured goods are in the service industry. The airlines will never return to where they are, and travel won't either. Look, the only reason airlines still exist is that because the government gave them $52 billion over the past 18 months. $52 billion. They were supposed to use it to keep their employees on the job. Remember that? Yeah. The airlines lobbied Congress in 2020, then 2021. We need $25 billion. We need $25 billion again, right? So the government gave it to them. And the airline unions, of course, were all lined up with the companies because they thought, well, they're going to use the money to keep us on the job. They didn't. They took the money, the airlines took the government $52 billion, and they laid off workers anyway, and now they're having a hell of a time getting them back. Shortages. You know, all the problems with the canceled flights and all that, you know, before the holidays, that's due to labor shortages. They couldn't get the people back because, you know, once you lay off, particularly your skilled people, the pilots and so forth, they're going somewhere else. They're going to get another job. They're not going to wait. And then you can't get back your best people that you really need to run the company. And that's what happened, you know, with all the cancellations, airline cancellations. Well, that hasn't changed. You know, it's kind of like the healthcare in the hospitals. You know, 500,000 nurses gone. Well, you know, lots of pilots and other skilled people and the airlines industry gone too. Leisure and accommodations, you know, hotels and restaurants and so forth, right? That's been impacted permanently here because of COVID. Business failures related to a lot of these service industries where you have most of the businesses. Look, there's about 30 million small businesses in the U.S. 30 million. Right, maybe 32-33 million total businesses in the U.S. You know, the 2-3 million are large businesses. Yeah. Well, when we say small business, what do we mean? Well, you could define it, I think, as fewer than 100 employees. Really small businesses, you know, fewer than 10. And then there's maybe 10 million who are self-employed, quote, a business, you know, a sole proprietor, not a corporation. who are there the only employee. So, you know, one third of that 30 some million are just workers, you know, who say that, oh, they're in business now, probably because they couldn't get a job with any other corporation. And that happens during crises like this. You know, people, professionals, whatever, they get laid off and they hang a shingle and says, oh, I'm a consultant now. I'm a consultant. I'm in business for myself. And you can start a business. It takes you $20 to go file with your state secretary of state, right? You're in business. You know, you sign a fictitious name statement, put it in a newspaper. You know, you're a business person. That's all you got to do. You know, there's over 10 million of them are single employed business people. They're really workers. We call them independent contractors, you see. But, you know, there's about 30 million, 20 million other than that group. And every year, you have hundreds of thousands of new businesses forming that way, very, very small, most of them. And you have hundreds of thousands who are going out of business. A big churn, hundreds of thousands in and out every year. And they're about the same until you get to a crisis like this. And then there's more going under than there is coming in. Although, you know, a lot of workers, unemployed, I'm going to start a business. Well, what do we got? Permanent closures. Small businesses that are gone permanently. Because some of them go under and come back, go under and come back on a different name, right? Well, the most conservative estimate is in 2021, we lost 200,000 permanently closed small businesses. About half of those are in personal services of various kinds. Other estimates are 500,000 last year. A lot of them are food establishments, restaurants, bars, and so forth. Well, they're all gone. That's another long-term economic impact legacy of COVID. A lot of small businesses gone, permanently shut down, no longer here. Another, just to sum up a little bit, pre-sum up, the labor markets we've seen, people working from home more often, other people dropping out permanently. Healthcare, we've seen what I talked about earlier there. Government deficits, of course, have ballooned. You know, before it began, it was like $22 trillion national debt, which is the summation of annual deficits, budget deficits. Well, now I guess it's around $28 trillion. 28? Yeah. The government has been able to absorb a lot of that because what it pays in interest rates for its borrowing from the public in the form of treasury bonds, notes, and bills, right, has been very low. Nearly zero. But now the Fed's raising rates. Yeah. So it's going to have to start paying more on the volume that it has increased its budget deficit. And thus the national debt. But, you know, you got to count. That's only the federal debt, $28 trillion. You got to add in at least $6 trillion more for state and local government agency debt. Okay, so that's about 35. And then you're going to add Federal Reserve debt, called the balance sheet, which increased $5 trillion as well, money thrown at investors and bankers who didn't need it. I've talked about that many times, but yet it's a debt. So, you know, it's a $40, $45 trillion U.S. debt. The problem is not the absolute level of debt, though. The problem is the ability to service that debt. In other words, pay the principal and interest. That's the issue. And if interest rates are rising, it costs more to pay the principal and interest, you see, because all this is, you know, variable. It costs more. That's the big issue. At what point will all the junk bonds and commercial real estate, right, not be able to be paid because the rates are rising? Right? At what point, you know, will the government's cost of financing its $28 trillion rising, not only because of the volume magnitude risen, but the rates risen, you know, really costs hundreds of billions or more every year that has to be paid out of the budget revenue. And of course, we're given tax cuts and not touching the tax cuts. So the amount of revenue coming in because of the tax rates is down while the interest rate and the cost is going up. You see, that's relationship, that ratio between a revenue cash flow on a corporate side and the ability to finance and pay for the principal and interest. That's called fragility. The fragility of the system is growing and will continue now to grow as interest rates are raised. And of course, we got inflation. That's a legacy now of COVID. More or less permanent, I would say, because the supply chains are whacked. They're not going to change and improve them overnight. You're not going back to what it was. Global trade is severely disrupted. Employment markets, product markets, severely disrupted. It's a total new normal. Total new. Well, maybe not total, but it's a new normal. And part of new normal is inflation. Oh, they say, oh, but wages are going up, right? Well, look at the statistic, right? CPI, inflation, 7%. Wages, 4.7%. Whoa, real wages are going down and will go down even faster. Yeah. Oh, but that's a recovery. Yeah, that's a recovery. So inflation and declining spending power is a legacy, economic legacy of the COVID recession, or what I call the Great Recession 2.0. Yes, it's a Great Recession, just like, well, almost like 2008-10, except the relationship between the financial system crash and the real economy contraction is reversed. You see, back in 2008-09, we had the crash in the financial system, and that dragged down the real economy. Fed stepped in, bailed out the financial system. Government threw some crumbs, didn't really correct and put the real economy back on its feet. Took years. Thank you, Barack Obama. Yeah. This time around, though, we have this deep contraction of the real economy that's causing financial fragility as rates rise now. And we will see at some point, I believe, financial instability. Impossible to predict exactly when or where. China property developers, U.S. commercial real estate, who knows, right? Maybe Argentinian corporate dollarized bonds, you know, who knows? Maybe Turkish lira currency crash. We don't know. We'll know when we see it. Yeah. And fiscal monetary policy has run its course. Fiscal policy, you know, stimulus is over. No more. You won't get anything. Joe Manchin makes sure of that. Look, Joe, it's not Joe Manchin or Kristen Sinema. You know, it's who's behind them. Who's behind using them to push the policies that they've assumed? You know, who's behind McConnell and the Republicans? Who's behind the corporate wing of the Democrat Party? It's the corporations in the background. They're pulling the puppet strings. All these policies that are passing and not passing, including the Voting Rights Act, you know, are really being manipulated by these corporations and their lobbyists and so forth behind the scenes, meeting with these people, telling them what to do. But the media doesn't reveal that, does it? No. Yeah. Other segments of the economy, education. You watch these small colleges go under. Already their enrollment is down by a fifth, and it's not going to come back. Big impact, on defaults going to occur in higher education. Retail, you know, big box retail, that's gone or going. Inflation, chronic now, supply driven, not demand driven. A lot of it's price gouging. Price gouging by big monopoly-like corporations. Come on, meat producers raising prices 20-25%. Any increase in demand? Are people eating more meat? No. Is there a problem producing and supplying meat? No. It's not supply and demand. It's just plain old price gouging. The same with the oil companies. This recent 7% in CPI, what is that? 29.6% is oil and gas. Are they got an oil shortage? No, there's a glut of oil, right? As demand increases, increase? No. They're just doing it because they can. All right, so we're facing problems of product markets, labor markets, financial markets, inflation, debt, interest rates, Fed policy. None of this is going away. This is here to stay. This is the legacy of COVID and the failure of either wing of the corporate party America, Republicans under Trump, Democrats under Biden, corporations behind both of it, causing these problems. Yes. Remember, parting message. Remember, who's behind the behind, right? On the surface, it looks like certain politicians, right, and a failure of Biden to really do anything. Look, he could put pressure on Manchin if he wanted to. Yes. But he doesn't really want to. He just wants to look like he's trying to do it, and it's not his fault. Yeah, that's the problem. You know, he goes down and talks about the voting rights bill, and you know what? Most of the people who put the Democrats in office in Georgia did not show up. Stacey Adams did not show up. People are getting tired of nothing really, really being done. But I'm telling you, the problem is behind the scenes. It's corporations that are really behind these problems. Okay, that's it. I'm out of here.